Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
The news has been dominated this week by the mounting toll of Australian deaths in the war in Afghanistan. The death of Sapper Rowan Robinson, killed in a firefight in Helmand Province, was our fourth in just a fortnight, taking the toll in the Afghanistan war to 27. And we're being told to brace for more and more bad news now that the so-called fighting season in Afghanistan is once again underway with better weather. So I thought it would be timely tonight to gain some insights into what it's like for the men and women in our armed forces facing up to such danger, where my first guest tonight says there are no atheists. When you jump out of a plane, everyone's a believer. We've already put out a call on our Facebook page for your experiences, either serving on the front line for our Defence Forces or what it's been like being a member of a family of a digger. We'd love to hear of your experiences on 1300 40 2020. We don't often hear about what goes on, the real price our diggers pay in serving our nation, the price their families pay for their noble service. Have you or yours served Australia either in war or in peacetime relief operations? It's a good and, as I said, a timely opportunity for us to pause, pay tribute. We who enjoy all the good things of this country, while our men and women on the Defence Forces are very often putting their lives on the line. 1300 40 2020 or post on our Open House Community Facebook page. One man who knows more than most about all this is Army Chaplain Tim Booker, who's worked inside the 3rd Battalion of the Royal Australian Regiment, 3RAR, which has experienced great tragedy and loss within its own ranks. Tim, welcome to Open House tonight.
Thank you, Lee. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great to see you, mate. Tim, first, give us a bit of your own history. How did you get involved with chaplaincy work in the first place?
Well, when I was at Theological College, at Moore College, we had the Bishop for the Defence Forces, who at the time was Brian King, come in with a couple of chaplains and tell us about the great need and opportunities within defence. And so that planted the seed in my mind. I thought that would be something I'd love to check out after I leave college. So I left finished college in 2000 and then went to work at Liverpool Anglican Church. And again, in the providence of God, that's right next door to the Holsworthy Army Barracks. We had a couple of soldiers at church, and they started nagging me to become an army chaplain. Mm. And funnily enough, two of those guys that were nagging me into the army, I nagged them into Moore College. They're now Anglican ministers.
How incestuous.
So we did a swap. And
had you ever given it a thought before?
Well, I did some army reserve work when I was a young bloke.
Okay.
And really enjoyed that. Mm. And but not really. When I started college, I thought, I'll be an Anglican minister. That's what I'll do. But then this year just came up out of left field.
In a moment, I want you to take us through some of your own often moving and certainly risky experiences in this work as a chaplain. But over this last fortnight, when you hear of more deaths in Afghanistan, four in a fortnight, how does that hit you?
It brings back some bad old memories. Mm. And it really does make me feel for the number of people that are tragically affected by one person's death overseas. There's a massive ripple effect. Obviously, the unit that the soldier is from takes a massive blow. Mm. Then, of course, the family and the friends back home are affected forever. I've had to notify several families over the years that they've lost a son overseas. And it's devastating news to deliver, obviously. And they never recover from it. And so that really does, it's a heavy weight. And so I really feel for those affected.
And I'm sure that experience never leaves you.
No, it doesn't.
Being the bearer of that kind of news.
No, that's right. It stays with you for a long, long time.
So can you take us into the lives of these men and women and their families? Give us a sense of the range of emotions and experiences they are going through as they are posted, often more than once or twice, into these very dangerous theatres of war.
Mm. You've heard the term salt of the earth. That's often how soldiers are described. And my time in the battalion certainly was true of that. That's a great description of soldiers. There's an earthiness to them, a toughness to them, a real desire to serve, and they do love deploying overseas. Generally, they want to go overseas. At the beginning, it's a real adventure. Obviously, the more deployment you do, the harsher the reality becomes. And obviously, Afghanistan and also Iraq, when we were going there, the fun and adventure wears off very quickly, and you realise just how dangerous it is over there.
Yes.
When you are getting shot at and you are having to shoot back. They are real shooting wars, and suddenly reality is there confronting you, and death and your own mortality is again right there in front of you.
Are they prepared for the fear? Are they prepared for the death? Not necessarily of themselves, but of those around them and those who they shoot?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, mate. In Australia, your training is aimed at helping you to get your head around the intensity of operations, but nothing can really prepare you for it other than going there and experiencing it. And now that we've been in Iraq, Afghanistan for so long now, a lot of people have been deployed to these places, you know, 8, 9, 10 times now.
Wow.
And so the stories are now trickling through the rest of defence. People are far more aware of what the reality is like.
Yes. Tim, your period as chaplain has coincided with a very eventful period in the life of the Defence Force with these major commitments to Iraq and Afghanistan. And you've got to say also the involvement with operations in nations like East Timor and the Solomons. And you've been to many of those operations firsthand. What's that been like? What's it been like for you to see it in the raw?
In many ways, it is life-changing, mate. You certainly realise just how good life here is in Australia. And one of the things you promise yourself when you're overseas is you'll never whinge about cold water and late trains again.
Yeah, I bet.
We do. We've got a great country. That's one of the things you remember. It's the devastation and the pain you see constantly on people's faces in places like Timor, Solomons, Iraq. I've been to those three. I haven't been to Afghanistan. And the fact that when you're there, you can just never rest or relax. You're always on your guard. Mm. There's an intensity there that you don't experience here in modern life. And as a civilian, you don't... you have no idea what it's like, and there's nothing to compare operations to. In Iraq, for example, I was there in 2006. That was the bloodiest year of that conflict, and there were thousands dying, and there were literally things exploding all the time, and you had no warning, no preparation.
Tell us about one particular episode in a British Lynx chopper over Baghdad.
Yeah, I was flying from one Australian location to another, and we were flying low and hard over the red zone, the unprotected zone of Baghdad, and the chopper pilot swerved the aircraft violently to the left and sent flares out, and we knew what was going on.
Yeah, so you did.
Yeah. At the time, because they don't play with those sort of toys. Yeah. And you realise there and then someone had you in their sights and was trying to blow you out of the air. I didn't tell my mother about that until I got home, of course. Or my wife.
Or your wife. I was going to say that. You're there often to bring comfort and faith to these men and women. And as I said, you've never met an atheist in the theatre of war.
Mm,
What do you say to them?
You just basically answer questions, really. Over there,
it's very interesting.
You realise that everyone realises that your life can be taken from you very quickly,
yes.
And you are very mortal. And so, people are being the chaplain there. People go to you and want to. They have their big questions. They're not quite brave enough to ask each other, and so the chaplain is very busy overseas. Often answering those big questions. What happens after I die? And so on. Before one of our rifle companies deployed to Iraq, one of the OC, the officer in charge of that company, came into me, my office, with his will and said, if anything happens, I want you to hand this to my wife and tell her the news. And then we had a chat for about half an hour about, you know, if he dies, what will happen? Not just here to the family, but to him. And so we have those discussions all the time.
And this is a time when there are no kind of neat pat answers that you can give. No neat little theological propositions.
No, that's right. Very raw, that's exactly right. Yeah. You will die and you'll meet Jesus. And people, they respond to that. They know that's what's going to happen.
Again, we'd love to hear your experiences and stories. We're with Tim Booker, Army Chaplain, tonight. If you've served in our armed forces, what's it really like? What are some of your stories, fears, triumphs, the price you and your family paid? Were these times when those big questions of faith, life and death, certainly came into particularly sharp focus for you? In what are often literally life-changing experiences, how did life change for you? Or we'd love to hear your tributes tonight to these men and women who regularly put their lives on the line serving Australia. 1300 40 2020 or post on our Open House Community Facebook page. Tim, I have this one particular snapshot of you in mind, one particular episode. We were live on Sky News doing this some years ago, the ramp ceremony for Jake Kovco. Leading a solemn procession from the back of a Hercules. Tell us how you became involved in that and what was that experience like? It was quite a notorious episode, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, mate. You're right. We were at a battalion function, and at about midnight that night, we got a phone call from Iraq saying that Jake had been killed overseas, and then a whole range of things swing into action in terms of notifications of family and friends, notifying the battalion. And so the function ended, we wrapped it up a bit early, at about 1 a.m, told everyone they needed to be back at work in the battalion at 7, you know, so 6 hours later. Can't tell you how happy everyone was with that.
Yes.
But we got everyone in, they realised it was serious, and we told everyone the news. But from there, things got complicated with the when Jake's body was meant to come home to Melbourne Airport. The wrong body had been placed in the casket. So all hell broke loose at that point, and it was pretty chaotic for the next sort of 3 or 4 weeks after that.
The care of the family is also critical in a role like yours, but especially with Jake Kovco's death, and especially, as you say, it became such a media storm with the wrong body being shipped home. How do you care for the family? And again, what do you say to them?
That was what made that complicated, of course, was the fact that it happened overseas, and we weren't sure. Well, there was confusion as to what had actually happened.
Yes.
It turned out Jake did shoot himself accidentally in the head. The reasons for that are still unclear. There had been two investigations. Now, all of those things added to the grief of the family. And I know Jake's mother quite well, and wife quite well, still keep in touch with him. And they still struggle, as you can imagine.
Yep.
But what made it worse was the ongoing complications and investigations.
Inquiries.
Yeah. And so on. And so, and also they were down in country Victoria, which made it hard for a Sydney-based battalion to provide care. But fortunately, the Defence Force is a big operation, and they did have some professional care, and other chaplains go and visit them. But again, you really are reliant upon those closest to you to provide that, the care that you need, that needs to be there year after year. And they've got a fairly good family network down there, which has helped.
So again, the kind of things you say to them, what can you say? I'm sure you feel lost for words in some respects.
Yep. Jake's wife, Shelley, got two young kids. You know, they want to know where Daddy is. How do you explain that to two young kids? And Jake's mum, she's so grief-stricken, so she still sees Jake in visions at night and so on. So really, I try and bring a biblical perspective on death into the situation. just remind them of the fact that death is a part of life.
Yes.
Even when it happens tragically. And there's often no pat answer for why.
You're too right there.
Why was he taken? I don't know.
Yeah.
Only God himself knows the answer to that question. What do we do in the meantime? Well, we now think about the big things in life, because often we haven't before this, and it's often a good trigger to think about our own impending death and how we're going to prepare our own loved ones for that and how we're going to get prepared for that ourselves. Am I ready to meet God? That's one of the big questions that comes out of all of this.
Tim, how's this shaped your own faith? Because I have no doubt that you too work through these big questions of life and death with these kind of experiences, and it can't help but shape or maybe even shake or challenge your faith.
I often get asked that question, mate. You know, people say, oh, has going to war shaken your faith? Has it caused you to doubt God? It never caused me to doubt God. What it's caused me to doubt is the human nature, just how incredibly sinful people are and selfish, and how prone we are to abuse power and put other people down and even kill those we don't like.
To create war in the first place.
Exactly, yeah. You go to these places and it feels godless. Yeah, there is no God here. People are doing as they see fit. They've abandoned God and they're doing what they want. And so that just clarifies, for me it becomes more clear that the sinful nature of man is a disaster for us. And in some parts of the world, it runs amok, unchecked. And we desperately need God and to make him the king.
So you emerge as a bit of an optimistic realist in a way.
Yeah.
In a funny kind of way, I suppose.
Yeah, that's right. I didn't get pessimistic. It just reminded me of the biblical truths that I know. Those great things that you keep clinging on to, you know. God created everything. We've messed it up. He will save. And we desperately need him. That's what comes out in these places.
Tim, it's a great pleasure to see you again. Tim and I shared our theological study, about 12 years ago?
Yeah.
A good year together. And it's been wonderful to see how your life has played out in the service of those who serve us. And I'm sure there'd be many people out there very much admiring not only the work they do, but of the work that you have done amongst them. Thanks so much for coming in and joining us on Open House.
My pleasure, Lee.
Your reflections or your experiences, maybe through the marvels of modern technology, you might be in one of those theatres of war listening to us on Open House tonight online. Give us a buzz, 1-300-40-2020, or post on our Open House community Facebook page. James has posted, during World War II, if asked, who is a soldier's best friend? The Australian soldier would reply, Jesus. My father was not a Christian until the morning he died in 1999. 3.5 years as a POW in Burma, that question above enabled him to hand over his life on his deathbed. And actually, James is on the phone, on the line tonight. Hi, James.
Hi, Lee.
James, thanks so much for joining us. Tell us about your dad's story.
Well, Dad was a prisoner of war in the Burma Railway and in Changi. He was an officer. He had a pretty tough time as an officer. One experience he shared with me was that he and four other officers had been stealing food so that they could feed the prisoners who were in the hospital in the prisoner of war camp.
Wow.
And the five officers were caught and made to stand to attention for 5 days, no food, no rest at all. And four of the five guys died at that point, and Dad was the only one that survived. But the skin from his legs, the gravity had just taken it down and it had covered his boots so that he was just standing there in a real mess. And he had varicose veins after the war because of that. But he did things as a prisoner that he felt unforgivable for. He knew about Jesus. He'd grown up in Sunday school. He'd gone to the war and known the answer to that soldier's question. But Dad saw things that he couldn't believe that a God would allow, and he did things that he felt this same God could not forgive him for. Mm. And he held on to those things for pretty well the rest of his life. Dad was the president of the Prisoner of War Association for 10 years. He took a lot of families back to Burma to see where the railway was after the war. He was loved by so many Christians in my mum's home church, and people prayed for him for all the way through from the war till the day he died. And an army chaplain actually sat with him on the morning that he died, and he just asked Dad, who's a soldier's best friend? And Dad gave that answer, Jesus. And Jim Doust, who was that army chaplain, a friend of mine, just led Dad through the next half an hour where Dad handed his life over to Jesus. And I saw Dad 2 hours later, and he was already dying. So that was the last conversation that he had. And I didn't know that he'd become a Christian. And I, as he was dying, I read to him Psalm 139, which has ever since been very powerful for me. And to know that Dad will be in heaven is such an exciting prospect for me, because I know that I wasn't confident about that before that day. So for me, army chaplains, as you've just been discussing, are very powerful in terms of just how they can get alongside soldiers who are very damaged.
It's an amazingly powerful story, James. Thanks so much for sharing it with us tonight, mate.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Good night.
Anne has rung us from Sydney. Hi, Anne.
Hi, Lee. Our son was killed in Afghanistan last year.
I'm sorry to hear that, Anne.
Like all the other parents, I don't know what to say when people say that.
How brave of you to ring up.
Look, I tell you why I've rung. From the moment the knock came on to the door, I fell on the cross. And I was saying to the receptionist, I am Roman Catholic.
Yes.
And Mary is... Our Lady, the Virgin Mary, is very much a part of my prayer life, my spiritual life. But what gave me great strength, Lee, was falling on the cross. And in the Catholic Church, we have a prayer, the Rosary. It's called the Holy Rosary.
Yes.
Now, I took a lot of that, as a lot of Christians do. We take our prayers for granted. And sometimes we say them and we don't think. But you know, the sorrowful mysteries of the Rosary were very powerful for me and helped me, because all I could do and all I can do and all I do now is fall on the cross.
And the message of the cross...
The message of the cross hit me,
yes,
Christmas Eve, and I can say this with joy. I was at church, and as usual, you know, I think we grow up being sentimental about the hymns and the songs of Christmas.
Yes.
And during the Mass was this wonderful sense of, it was peace. My son was all right, and the joy of Christmas is that God sent his son to save us. And to save my son.
Through that suffering on the cross.
Through that suffering on the cross. So that, for me, is the joy of Christmas. That, gee, God loved us so much that he sent Jesus. And at Easter, the hope that I have, and, well, I do, I believe Jesus died, and my son has divine mercy. And we will see him again. I will see him again, as we all will have divine mercy. See God, see each other through Jesus.
And what a wonderful message of hope. And I got to say, what courage for you to ring and share that with us tonight. I thank you so much for your call.
Thank you. I hope it helps some of the families, because that's all you can do when the knock comes is, knock on the door is, fall on the cross.
Yeah.
Okay.
How wonderful of you to call tonight. Thank you so much, Anne.
Thank you. God bless.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. God bless to you.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.